Well, good afternoon, everybody. This is Simon Ward, and I am back today with Toby Baxendale. Hello, Toby.
Hello, Simon. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, no problem, Toby. So this is part two of the interview we started last week, where we talked about changes to your lifestyle, having read a book that I recommended. So you remember quite clearly Primal Endurance.
Yes.
Okay.
That was my summer reading last year, which is great.
Well, what were the key lessons that you took from reading that book?
I'm 48 years old, so clearly time is against me, you know, in the world of athletics, or so you think. And it gave me great hope, actually, that you can still maintain, you know, quite a high level of fitness throughout the whole of your middle to almost old age. And also, what became apparent to me was this kind of obsessive training with, you know, all the latest nutrients, carb this and carb that, you know, taking gels, taking various drinks and so on and so forth, which may be absolutely fine for a laboratory tested controlled environment, but of course every single body is different, and certainly my body does not respond well to that. And then moving over to a much more relaxed way of training for the majority of the training, and using your own internal fat resources to be your primary fuel, was just such a transformational thing for my overall diet, through my diet, weight control, just an appetite suppressor. So I'm not hungry all the time, yet still being able to do quite a massive volume of training compared with, you know, the vast majority of individuals, and just generally eating in a much more peaceful and pleasant way, and not being loaded with all these sort of artificial so-called, you know, sports enhancing energy drinks and juices. And then just taking that training in a much more relaxed way, doing the nose breathing, so I'm always working very, very much in my aerobic capacity, going intuitively against everything that new, you know, in terms of trying to push yourself, but specifically not pushing yourself, but then pushing yourself only in those very highly intense short bursts of periodization that we did, actually has, you know, increased my performance. So, I mean, not only lifestyle benefit, performance benefit. So I didn't read the book to get any performance benefit. I read it on your recommendation, and I thought, well, great, I'm going to get lots of lifestyle benefits, but the byproduct was a performance benefit. So, you know, I'm like doubly happy.
Okay, so let's just go back and just dive in a little bit deeper on some of the things you mentioned there. So you mentioned weight control. It's you're not the sort of build that I would ever have to worry about your weight, and it's never been high on our list of priorities to trim down either your weight or your body fat. But you did tell me you'd lost some weight. Can you remind me how much that was?
Well, I went down from 82 kilos to 77 kilos.
Right, and yeah, how tall are you? Just for the listeners,
6'2.5", 6'3", that kind of thing. Yeah, so it's tall and lanky, as you say. I'm beanpole. Yeah,
yeah.
But you know, you can carry quite a bit of fat on that and not look fat. So that's really what I was doing, Simon. I just got rid of an extra layer of padding.
And at any time in that, did you feel like that weight loss contributed to a particular lack of strength or muscle power? Because that's often when you lose weight, you do lose some muscle power.
No, absolutely not. I'm delighted to say I know exactly what you're saying, but definitely not.
Okay, now I know that the Primal Endurance book talks about what some people might consider to be a low carb, high fat diet. Did you go quite that far, or did you just change to eating more natural, non processed foodstuffs?
I remember in the 70s when I was growing up, there was a campaign to make sure you weren't putting salt on everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's enough salt in, you know, the foods anyway. And I kind of taken that approach and just consciously said, okay, that is a bit of an excess carb, you know, so I don't really need that. I don't really need that. Now, I'm going to be a bit more mindful about what I'm eating, but I haven't gone to the extent of ketosis or anything like that, which is what you can do if you go down these ways. But just it's an infinitely much more balanced diet. But just principally taking all the, you know, energy drinks, energy bars, gels, just deleting that from the diet, from a cost perspective, wonderful. But B, it means that your body actually is looking for all those sources of energy rather than you adding it on in addition. So it then encourages it to use its own sources, fat sources, which are much more efficient anyway. So I'm just delighted by it.
This is the subject of another conversation I had with last week with the Dr. Tom Hughes, where we talked about people. A lot of people say they're trying to improve their ability to use fat, but the body's already quite good at that. And if you starve it of food, it'll use fat as a source of energy if you're not feeding yourself. Mm. But it's the other way around. It's the dependence on carbs. So it's this habit that triathletes and endurance athletes have of automatically reaching for the carbs when they get a bit hungry, if they get a bit lightheaded, and a psychological dependence, if you like, on those products, as well as probably a physiological one. So you lost weight, you changed your nutrition just to focus on more natural stuff, which probably took you a little bit away to probably consuming more fats and proteins and less carbs.
Definitely it's rebalanced in more in the favour of protein and fat than it is carbs, definitely.
Okay. And then you mentioned the sort of contrast between the lower intensity, probably stuff that you weren't quite comfortable with, but we tried something that you mentioned there, which was called nose breathing. Now, perhaps you can explain how you did it, because a lot of people may not have heard of this, although the more I read, actually, the more there is written about this sort of stuff. It's not quacky at all.
Well, Simon, if you remember, I commented, bloody hell, this nose breathing. I'm dribbling all over the place, this, that and the other, and it's all rather revolting. But after about a week of just consciously making sure I was nose breathing on the bike and on the run, you do manage to get your system used to it. And actually that then becomes your steady state kind of way of making sure you're not going into that. It's not the red zone, it's the bit just building up to the red zone, isn't it? It's that bit where you're drawing, you know, a bit too much from your carb sources than you are from your fat sources. And that's when you're being a little bit efficient. So it forces you right back down into very, very steady state. But having said that, you know, I could even then, some of the hills that I was doing in the place I live with when I'm abroad were extreme. And, you know, I was nose breathing by the end of it up most of those.
Yeah.
So it's a control. It's a control, isn't it? It's a way to make sure you don't, because your mind, my mind always says, oh, look, I can, you know, I can whiz up here, I can bomb along down there, I can do this, I can do that. My mind's well ahead of my body. Yeah. But that then forces, then you force your body to try and perform, and you go into that murky zone where you're not really getting any benefits at all. And you're not getting any real hardcore aerobic benefits or anaerobic benefits. So
no, I mean,
kicks you out of that zone.
Yeah, it's what people call the sweet spot, and you do get benefits from being in there, but they can sort of stop. They can stop showing up. It's almost like you reach a plateau, and then you need to go back to this, the training you've just described, and at the opposite end of the spectrum, which we'll come to in a minute, the very high intensity stuff. But I've experienced now from lots of people saying that they really struggle with maximum aerobic function, which is the MAF training, and, you know, keeping their heart rate down into the prescribed zone. So, and if you want to be what I call a naked athlete, you know, training without gadgets, then nose breathing is perfect, because you really, if you start pushing up at the threshold, you definitely can't get enough oxygen in through your nose alone.
No.
So it's something that I would recommend a lot of people to try. I'm reading a book, actually, that you might be quite interested in, Toby. It's called The Oxygen Advantage. And as I read it, I see that they are promoting nose breathing and all of the myriad benefits that come from this, including that, you know, releasing more nitric oxide into the blood system and all of the benefits that has just by being through the nasal cavity. And it just talks about the Tarahumara Indians, who were made popular by the Born to Run book, and the way they can run for, you know, complete marathons, running at a fairly brisk pace, breathing only through their nose. So it's not a fad at all.
No, it's not bad. Well, Simon, the thing that really hit home for me, I used to think, you know, these guys who claim they can do, you know, ultra runs and this, that and the other, how on earth do they do it, you know, without taking, you know, literally rucksacks full of food and or have assistance on the way and so on and so forth. But I can see it very, very clearly now, how if you stay in that nose breathing zone, you need very, very little extra assistance, you know, from gels, bars, other food or other nutrients, once you've got your body used to it. And I can actually now believe that thing is possible. I used to have a disbelief in that, but so now I can see it very, you know, or believe these are kind of some kind of mythically, you know, ancient people who, you know, like the Maasai warriors who can run around the desert for,
yeah,
you know, hours and hours and hours on end. But, you know, this is how they're doing it. And yeah, so, I mean, I'm a believer now. I could see myself being able to do ultras if I wanted to.
Well, we can talk about your experience at trying to complete a long-distance event without any carbs in just a moment, Toby. So at the other end of the spectrum then, where you definitely do need to breathe through as many places that will take your oxygen as possible, is the very high-intensity training. Now, you know, you referred to your body type, that long, lanky beanpole type, which the sort of body type you wouldn't naturally look at and think that's a body type designed to push out huge amounts of power or even designed for that sort of work. You know, athletes that are like that tend to go into endurance events. They don't tend to sprint, they don't play rugby, they don't do explosive stuff. But we pushed you out of your comfort zone at the opposite end of the spectrum as well, and we started doing three quite short high intensity sessions a week. And let's focus on the bike, because that's the way this conversation is going, to the full functional threshold power test. So can you remember what sort of sessions we did briefly on the bike?
Were the 20 minute CPU test?
Well, we did the 20 minute CP20 test, but then there was the training sessions that we did leading up to that had you generating huge amounts of power.
Yeah, well, the training sessions running up to that. So Simon, you know, as you know, so I'm talking to the viewers now, he changed my training plan, and I looked at it and I thought, the man's mad, you know, he's gone absolutely bonkers, yeah? There are these little things in there, like 30 seconds, or even five, and sometimes even as low as 5 or 6 seconds, of absolute all-out mental burst of energy, maximum power, and only a few times. And I thought, no, he's written this wrong, and he must be mad. What's gone wrong with my coach? So, you know, we then had a little chat, and you explained the methodology behind it. And, then I did it. And, wow, you know, they were exhausting, even those tiny, weeny bursts. And you certainly felt it, you know, during the day. And, you know, I realized, well, you can properly stretch yourself to, you know, real extreme limits in seconds. Bursts of seconds, and you know, only 5 or 10 of the maximum. So that was really, really interesting, going over to that type of training.
So we did one of those bike sessions per week, didn't we? We didn't do the same one every week, but we did we either did Tabata intervals, I think, which were just a 4 minute duration of 20 seconds on, 10 seconds off. So we had a controlled wattage there, which was around 150% of your functional threshold. So somewhere around 500 watts for you then, 450, 500 watts for you then, with then a really easy spin.
He was going up to over 600 watts. And that's what really opened my eyes, because in those few, you know, I was holding it for up to 600 for, I think some of them were even up to 30 seconds, some of them were, if I remember correctly. But you've got the training records anyway, Bevan.
Yeah, well, the 30 second ones came with a 4.5 minute recovery. You wouldn't have been the only one who would have looked at that session, Toby, and said he has written this wrong. 30 seconds plus 4.5 minutes. I'm an endurance athlete. I'll be recovered in I'll be recovered in a minute. And of course, your heart rate never gets up that high on those first 30 seconds, and it drops really quickly because of your well developed aerobic transport system. But what's missing is the central nervous system, how tired that gets. And of course, you get to rep 3 and all of a sudden your legs start failing you.
Yeah.
It's a big eye opener. And this is the super high intensity training that people like Michael Mosley started talking about in those Horizon documentaries, you know, and everybody started thinking, well, I can get super fit on just 3 lots of 20 minutes a week. And actually, since then, Toby, I can't remember what the hormones are called, but they're the same hormones that are released through endurance training, long distance, long, slow distance stuff. The same hormones are released through super high intensity training. So you actually do get benefits. So when you read about these books that are telling you, you know, you can reduce your training and still do ultra events, they're referring to these hormones and everything. So we did this we started in July 2016, didn't we? So middle of last year in the summer, and you'd been following this program for quite a while. And I think you did a CP20 test towards the end of sort of like the autumn, around October time, and you hit 390 watts for 20 minutes. And then you did in January early this year, you did this stupendous test where I'm looking at the results now, and you actually did send me a photograph of your TV with the news reporters there, but you sent the bit underneath where you could clearly see the Velotron power readings, and you hit, I'm not going to get this wrong for the second podcast in a row, 421 watts. You held that power for 20 minutes. Yeah?
Yeah.
And it says here, it just says, -shattered! Exclamation mark.
Yes, I must admit, that was literally, I did literally think of falling off the bike there, but you know, you're all kind of tied in with your shoes. I did think, oh, I'll fall off and quietly pass away. Yeah, it was tough, yeah.
Okay, now, there was that figure in itself was the headline for a blog I did.
Yeah.
And the blog said, you know, this guy just pushed out 421 watts for a 20-minute time trial. Do you want to know how he did it? And the purpose of the blog wasn't to either big me up or promote you into Team Sky's thinking as the next Chris Froome. It was to sort of share the training that and the lifestyle changes that were around that that enabled you to achieve the 421 watts. But let's just spend maybe 60 seconds explaining how you did the test, because we use the Velotron, which is a university research level ergometer for the laboratory. So it's very, very accurate. And you can select courses. So tell us about the course you selected.
Well, I did the progressive interval one, because I know on a normal day, you know, it might take me 18 or 20 minutes, and you can keep pedaling on after that.
Yeah.
To make up your 20 minutes. And this is a slight change, because, you know, it does give you some inclines. I think there's an 8% and a 6%, a 4 and a 3. You know, it builds steady. Because I've tended to just, when I'm out on the road, I feel a lot better if I've got something to bite into. You know, I just know I can put out a lot more power if I'm having to work hard. If I'm just going on a flat, I can work hard, but you know, you can work harder when you're having to really push yourself up a hill or something. So anyway, I did it on that one, and it was exhausting.
But I think the discussion there is where you're on the flat is it's kinetic energy. Some people find it easier to put the time trialists are able to put out big wattage using high cadence on the flat. What you're saying here is that you were able to push out a much lower cadence going uphill, but you still, and there's no escaping from the fact that you still had to generate an average of 421 watts for the duration of that. For the duration of that test, regardless of whether, you know, it's what in exclamation marks, it's cheating. You know, you still got to pull out that power going uphill.
Yeah, no, I pulled up that power going up the hill, and then what I've realised in practical and in terms of how it's you know, converted out into doing, you know, an Ironman race, is that I now know absolutely with confidence that I can properly ride out of the saddle all the way up any of those coals, not a problem. And I can, you know, eat into many places ahead of me and not exhaust myself. So that's what I can do. But it doesn't, that performance does not transfer onto the flat, you know, onto the flat. My the CP20 that I did last week, which you set me to not do on a hill, my performance has gone up. It was at 334 on a flat, which was previous to that, it was between 310 and 320.
Right.
So it has had some impact on the you know, on the flats in the traditional time trial type of you know, position. But it's uphill for some reason. Uphill, you know, I'm the business uphill. Yeah. I'm okay on the flats, and I think it you worked out is to do with that kinetic energy that you've got, you know, with fast twitcher muscles. If you've got a load of those and you can hold that power, that's when you can do those time trials on the flats. But if you haven't and you're a slow twitcher muscle, you can often still bring out much more power in those hill environments, and that's where I sit in that zone.
Okay.
So that's been really interesting and revealing.
Okay, so it's true and it's real. We got the photograph and everything to prove it. We've probably got the save files. Probably got the save file. But really, the headline wasn't the important part, was it? It's all of the underlying changes that you've made to your lifestyle, that you've made to your nutrition. You know, I think also some of the gains came because with that traditional threshold style of training, where you push a bit harder than you should on the easy stuff and you perhaps don't go quite as hard on the hard stuff, you've able to move the training loads to the other end of the spectrum in the main. That allows you to recover from the longer sessions. It allows you to have more energy for the high-intensity sessions, so you squeeze a bit more out of each workout. You've perhaps learned mentally how to unlock a higher level of power and what that means. And your nutrition has just enabled you to recover better as well.
Well, recover better, sleep better, not be as tired. I mean, it really is. Simon, I read that book, as you know, it's just lifestyle. That's all I'm interested in. I hadn't raced since 2012. I had no interest in racing since 2012, thinking, oh, you're over the hill, mate. You know, just enjoy it now for what it is. But then and that's what I really do. But the byproduct for me is that performance enhancement. I mean, that's a nice pleasure, but it was definitely not the goal. And it definitely still isn't the goal, actually. The goal is lifestyle. And just being able to maintain, you know, a really good high level of fitness throughout my late 40s, 50s, and going into the 60s. That's all I want to do, quality of life. But, you know, if I'm getting performance benefit, I'm super happy, yeah?
Okay, so it's getting up to the witching hour, you have to leave. So I said we'd talk about your keto experiment. You were, earlier this year, which wasn't discussed previously, you went to Ironman Mallorca 70.3 in May, with your brother-in-law, and you decided on the spur of the moment that you were going to see if this experiment really could work. So tell us what happened in that race.
Yes, well, I absolve you for any responsibility, as you know. That's why I didn't tell you right up until the very, very end, because you wouldn't allow me to go completely keto throughout the whole race. But I did anyway, and did it. So, you know, I just wanted to experiment, you know, well, what would it be like doing 5.5 hours of exercise with absolutely nothing other than water? And because that would be an extreme control point then, which you can work back from and then find a nice sort of sweet spot. So I did. So I did that. Good swim. Got out on the bike. Two thirds of the way through the bike, really, really confident. Then I started feeling it, and I thought, all right, here we go. Right, I'm going to have to get some emergency fuel in, and we're back to the old game of. Certainly on the run, it would be every fuel station grabbing whatever you can and so on and so forth. And I thought, so maybe I can go for 3 hours or something, or 3.5 hours, but no, I can't go for the full sort of five and a half hours. But then I got onto the run, and I don't know what it was, but I still kept to the water, and I had a couple of those half oranges that they give you. That really refreshed me, actually, and I don't know whether that's a psychological thing or whether there's actually something in it that just a couple of oranges can trigger off enough carbs for you. But then I had a good run, a really good solid run, right up to the end. And it wasn't too dissimilar to my 2012 time. I think it's four minutes slower, something like that, than my 2012 time. So I was like, wow, okay. And recovery was fairly instantaneous, I've got to say. It was pretty much within the hour. You know, I felt, I feel all right, you know. Now, I'm not saying I could train again, but I definitely felt not absolutely wagged, which is how I would usually feel after doing a race. So it was an interesting experiment.
Yes, so half Ironman, and if anyone doesn't know the Mallorca 70.3 course, there's a big long hill in there, isn't there, halfway through, probably going to be half an hour's worth of climbing.
Yeah,
you're in a race.
It's 1,500 meters of climb there. But look, I think the bringing up to date is I did one in September, Ironman Portugal, the 70.3 course, has slightly less climbing. I think it's about 1,000 meters of climbing, and that one I think I measured out it's about 20 carbs per hour. It's no more than 100 gram of carbs throughout the whole thing, and that was 15 minutes quicker. And it was a pleasurable, much more pleasurable experience, and no energy drops. So I kind of conclude that I'm in a hybrid state. I need a low dosage of carb to get through successfully an Ironman race. But it's not like before, when you just have to, you know, before I was just taking at every available stop, you know, you take your bottle and refuel and this and that gels, and, you know, anyway, that's all gone now.
Yeah, and I think the nutritionists out there, particularly those with involvement with sports nutrition companies, will be pulling their hair out and saying this isn't possible. And there'll also be the people out there that will sympathise with your plight, that, you know, you're sick of gels, you're sick of the sort of energy bars and the stuff that makes you feel nauseous in a race, and you wanted to find something different. So you went to the opposite end of the spectrum and decided to take in nothing. And then you can do that sort of slowly feedback in until you find the optimal level that allows you the best performance
for the least amount
of nausea. Now, there might be a faster performance in there, but if it's associated with nausea, then you've gone over the curve, haven't you, in the bell?
In
the bell curve, and you've gone down the side of faster but less pleasurable. So you want to get in that, I didn't use the word sweet spot because we're trying to get away from sweet stuff, but you want to be in that nice little band.
It's a really comfortable zone where you can just perform well without feeling ill. I mean, the amount of times I felt like, you know, vomiting as a result of these highly sugared up to the eyeballs energy drinks. I mean, I know why they're there, but they just don't work for me. They might work for other people, and I don't, you know, want to get knock any of these companies, but they're just not for me.
And I've had conversations and with other people who have similar stories to tell, so there will be a lot of people that can nod the head as you're saying what you're saying. So the experiment continues. It's a lifestyle experiment. Yeah. We obviously have got another 20 years to go on this to see if you can continue to push back the age barrier, continue to get abundant energy as you get into your 50s and 60s. You can become the Benjamin Button of the entrepreneurial world and go backwards with your looks and everything. Yeah, yeah. As your chronological age goes forwards. Listen, Toby, I know you've got to go now, so thanks very much for sharing that story with us. As I said, it's an ongoing story and experiment in perfecting really the best lifestyle, really, rather than the best performance. And no doubt we can come back in the future and find out how you're getting on with your next races.
That'd be a pleasure.
Training. Yeah, so Toby Baxendale, thank you very much, listeners. Thank you for listening, and I'll be back next week with another guest. So for now, bye-bye.